Welcome to the Fantasy Golf Degenerates Podcast.
Going on, DGen Nation, Kenny Kim here, bringing you another Fantasy Golf Degenerates podcast this week for the Valero Texas Open. And as usual, I am here with everybody's favorite Canadian, Tyler Tambolin. Tyler, how are you this week?
I'm doing well, Kenny. Excited to be back with you, man. We got a little bit of a match play situation to talk about here. We'll go through all that, how your week went, how my week went. Before we get into it, I want to remind everyone very quickly, this podcast is presented and sponsored by rotogrinders.com. Head on over to rotogrinders.com/dgen. Get yourself 10 bucks off the first month. I'll talk at the end of the show about all the stuff I've got going on there this week and with the Masters upcoming, of course. But you and I talked a little just now before the show, Kenny, just a couple minutes, and said almost like the Masters is coming. We just had the Players, the Honda, WGC. Get like a little mini hangover here with the Valero, but got a pretty good week ahead of us. DJ withdrew early, but before we get into that, we'll talk about the match play and everything you want to go over with there. How was your week, and what were your thoughts on the tournament? A little Billy Ho action, the Ho train taking it down.
Yeah. Not the best week. I mean, the thing is, like, all my guys that I was heavy on, like, lost in a playoff trying to get into the Sweet 16. Like, I had a bunch of, like, who was it? I had a bunch of
Answer, Henley, Neiman, yeah, like, guys trying to do one, like, one putt at the very end. It just crushed me, too.
Yeah, so, I mean, that's basically what happened, but that's match play. It's wild as fuck. I mean, you never know what's going to happen. And you could see this week, I think the highest-ranked person in the final four was Scheffler, right? But I think nobody else was – everyone else was outside the top 25, I guess. One golfer in the top 16 – advance to the Sweet 16. And like I said last week, it's a wild tournament. You know, just make your optimals and hope and pray. You know, that's basically the way it goes when it comes to match play. And you know, this week it didn't work out the best for me, but it was still fun to watch. I think they really need to emphasize Saturday. Like, Saturday is a really fun day for match play. Like, Sunday, it sort of wears off. You see everyone getting tired. There's only a couple of matches. You can't show golf every shot, every minute. But on Saturday, you know, you get the Sweet 16 and the Elite Eight. There's a lot of golf. Everyone's still sort of fresh, you know, and it was a lot of fun. I mean, you see Fleetwood blowing it. That screwed me for bets, you know, but I mean, anyways, it's a really fun watch on Saturday. You get a lot of good golf going, and I think they need to market that Saturday a little bit better than what they do. I mean, Sunday, I mean, yeah, you're going to get finals like that. Billy Horschel and Scheffler. And I mean, at least Scheffler had the home field advantage thing going. Yeah, I mean, at least it wasn't like, you know, Billy Horschel, Kuchar. I mean, Jesus, that would have sucked.
Yeah. Oh, man.
Yeah. But, I mean, what do you think of the event?
I got a couple thoughts. Yeah, I'm with you on a lot of that. Like you said, they got extremely lucky to have almost the college showdown of the Gators versus Texas, you know, Florida versus Texas feature, because it would have been much worse. I mean, Billy coming on, I'll give a quick shout out. Eric Patterson, EPAT, great guy. He has a little newsletter there, The Quick Nine. Couple things about it. One, he brought this up, is that, you know, a couple changes that could be made for match play. So I'm going to talk about that in a second, but also just made the point of, like, what, you know, essentially what could have been. Like, we could have had much worse final when the guy like Billy Horschel is saying after the event, I feel bad for the fans that had to watch that at home. You know, something's wrong with the format. Like I said,
it was a great golf on Sunday.
It sucked, right? It was windy out too, and
tough conditions. But I mean, like, what are your thoughts about changing it? What do you think?
Well, like, I didn't have a lot personally. Like, I've always been a big fan of this. There just needs to be a change. That's why I brought up EPAC, because he had a couple good ones in there from some others and then one of his own. I think some of these stand out. I'll get your thoughts. But he said one was, you know, they could, you know, a lot of people talked about setting it up easier. So this was some outside feedback if they could set it up easier, because Sunday, nobody wants to watch that when it's windy out, can't control the weather. But then you go have these same pin placements and things and setups where it's like you're watching to see who makes bogey versus double bogeys, or you know, who doesn't go in the woods and all this type of stuff. So there's that factor of it. Again, it's the best in the world. They made it to the finals. I know there's going to be arguments for both sides, but I really like his idea. This is his idea. Can you hear this out? He said, basically you set it up so that day one, you play a stroke play event. The number one gets to draft who he plays against, and then they play in a one-on-one format as it used to be, single elimination. But that way you still get to see at least 2 days of all the best golfers. And if they go out, they go out. But not only did they get to play stroke play to find where they stand in the seeding, they get to pick their opponent off who's left on the board when it gets down to them. And then you run it out single elimination after that, and then go into the same format. Sweet 16, Elite 8, Final Four, and let's go. I thought that was a great idea. It's unique. It's still a lot of fun. It blends. It's more of a hybrid, but it can keep more golf fans interested. And then you should get a pretty good field on the weekend. Like, these guys got to pick who they wanted to go against, whether it's off strength or weakness. Again, match play, anything can happen. But I kind of like that idea. What are your thoughts?
I don't hate it. That would, I guess it would fall into the same format then. You play 64, or you play a stroke play event the first round. And so what are you saying? Like, whoever is first in stroke play afterwards gets to choose who they play?
Yeah, it'd be like, and they get to pick who they go against. Yeah, there'd be more to it, of course, but you could have like the a little lottery system. It's whatever you want to do.
What if like eight people are first with at minus five?
Yeah, just be, I'm sure, like, that would just be takes 2 seconds to do a randomizer and say, look, you all came first. It's like a draw out of a hat, like a playoff. You're tied for first. You're about to have a 5-man playoff here on Sunday. There's who goes first off the tee. It is what it is. There's going to be some luck, but it's still, the way it is now is fine. I just think at the same time, something like that would make it a little bit more fun. I like the idea of it, just because right now when it's, you know, Rahm versus Palmer, 2-0 versus 2-0, that's a great matchup. Let's see what's going to go down. Who's going to get to the Sweet 16, two buddies. There's a lot of, you know, storyline and theory that can go into that, where you're getting a little bit excited for that type of matchup. But like you said, you got to have a way to hype up the weekend in some way, shape, or form. This was extremely bad. You mentioned at the top, but just last thing is, Fleetwood was 21st ranked and Rahm was third. That's the only two guys in the top 21. So realistically, the only guy in the top 20 to get to the Sweet 16 was Rahm. After that, Fleetwood in 21st and then 30th or worse. And in the final four, you had 31, 32, 30, and 52. So is what it is. For us, you know, hardcore golf fans, that's exciting to go out and watch, because, you know, it's fine, but it really wasn't. I mean, like, they called it a pillow fight on Sunday. It was, you know, two buddies. And then I don't know your thoughts on this, but that's going to be another thing where it's to each their own. But these guys were like best buddies in this final matchup. Like, Billy Horschel literally gave the guy a 34-foot putt. That's ludicrous, and I don't care if it's just because the commentator said it or not. The way Billy Horschel was lagging it at that time was very strong. The setup that he had to make that putt with the wind, with some you know, undulation there and that sort of thing, it was not a gimme hole, and Billy goes and makes the par. And then he probably felt pretty bad about it, but in the end, he got the win. So, you know, butterfly effect, if you will. But still, I just thought that was crazy, and buddy-buddy is not always exciting in match play. I like the Ryder Cup and, you know, President's Cup, where there might be some laughs later on, but it's a lot of, you know, between, you know, there's no camaraderie between them in the middle of the match usually.
Well, I mean, it depends on who plays. I mean, you saw a little bit of that with Kevin Na and Dustin Johnson. I mean, that was probably the biggest story of the round robin play on Friday. And one other thing going on, I sort of like to play, make it easier on Sunday. I'm a fan of that, just because of how tired these guys must be. So I like that idea. Not so sure about the setup that Eric was talking about. I mean, because the thing is, like, Friday and Saturday were a lot of fun to watch, man. Like, it was great golf Friday and Saturday. I mean, you saw guys trying to, you know, even guys who were out of it, like Kevin Na, doing some crazy ass fucking shit to try and win. Even though, hey, I mean, we could talk about that.
Let's segue with that, and then also that's your EPAT hate right there, because he was high on the horse of, he's against our boy Kevin Na a little bit too. You and I have been big Kevin Na fans.
You know, actually, it's funny. It's funny. I don't have many. I love Eric Patterson. He's one of my favorite dudes online. I mean, if you guys know our relationship. I mean, when I left Rick Rundgren's site, you know, I told Rick to hire Eric. You know what I'm saying? So, I mean, like, I mean, we have a good relationship. It's funny. We just differ in opinion a lot. He's one of the few guys that I differ in opinion a lot with. I don't know what it is, but it's just the way it is with him.
But Kenny, real quick, I had a guy reach out to me today and say, you know, it's the anniversary of the Kucher versus Sergio back and forth between you and Kenny. I hope we get that again on non-DJ. And I said, honestly, that's kind of funny you remember that. But I said, unfortunately, I don't think we're going to be on opposite sides on this one, because you and I were both pretty much on the same side of thinking everything Kevin Na. So you can tell them what happened for those that don't know or were living under a rock and missed it, but go ahead.
So, like, DJ lipped out. I mean, and then it's not like he just went straight to the putt and picked it up. I mean, he, like, put his hand, you know, he looked down, casually walked to the ball after he lipped out, had about 6 inches, and just scooped it up. Technically, Kevin Na didn't tell him it was good yet. When everyone knew, you know, it was good. You know, it was that same situation as Kucher and Sergio, except for the fact that, you know, Kevin didn't take the point like Kucher did. So it was definitely gamesmanship by Kevin Na. And it was definitely Kevin Na enjoying being Kevin Na. There's no doubt about that. I mean, the guy, I don't know, I think it was Jeff Feinberg who said he likes to hear Kevin Na. Kevin Na likes to hear Kevin Na speaking. That's the truth. Okay. I mean, that's the truth when it comes to him. That's who he is. Probably one of the reasons why he's not the most well-liked golfer in the Korean community, even though he has more wins than basically every other Korean out there. A lot has to do with the fact that, you know, he's not that humble. Let's just say that with the walk-in, you know, and stuff like that, you know, and Koreans sort of like that, like traditional Koreans, me, myself, I'm a huge fan of what Kevin Na does. Okay. But so basically what it was just gamesmanship. Like, you know, he went up to DJ, was like, yo, DJ, I didn't tell you that shit was good. I mean, I'm not going to take the point. I'm not going to be that much of an asshole, but I'll be a little bit of a prick and tell you what the deal is. You should have waited for me, even though, I mean, everyone knew the putt was good. Okay, everyone knew the shit was good, but it was gamesmanship, and it sort of got in DJ's head. You know, I mean, he ended up losing the match. He ended up not doing any media appearances after his Friday round when he was asked about it. Didn't say nothing about it, so it definitely worked. And that's the one thing I like about match play. I mean, you see that in certain times in WGC events, and you see it all the time in the Ryder Cup. You know, that's why the Ryder Cup is fun. You see gamesmanship. You see different types of angles from golfers you don't normally see in a stroke play event. And I think that's a good thing. As long as you don't take over the line and be a fucking jackass like Matt Kuchar. Now, when it comes to Kevin Na, he was just a slight jackass. I'm okay with that. It could be my Korean bias on this as well, because I like Kevin Na. And so, you know, and I think that, you know, that gamesmanship is something that is needed. You know, and you saw a little bit of it, I guess it wasn't really gamesmanship, but when Kucher played Spieth, this past week, with the whole bringing the whole crowd to find his ball, you know, and then Spieth wasn't a really big fan of the ruling. I mean, that technically wasn't anything that Kucher could have done, but I mean, still, it rattled Spieth a little bit, and Spieth ended up losing. Stuff like that is fun to watch, and I was a fan of the way that went, and I wasn't a fan of the buddy buddy. I know everyone says it's a classy way to go, but this is like the one week where you don't have to be too classy. It's match play. You can rub your guy a little bit the long way, and I'll give you an example. You know, when it comes to one-on-one sports, I mean, the mental factor of the game, it's probably highlighted even more than when you do in a stroke play event. Even golf is extremely mental. An example of this was, you know, so I used to be like the top 3 9-ball player in Blacksburg, Lynchburg, and Roanoke in my mid-20s. And the thing is, I've told this story before, but people like hated playing my ass, because the way I thought about it is I wanted people to hate playing me. Because it's a one-on-one event, you know, and again, it's a mental factor. So, like, you know, I would just get hammered. I would just get lit. And I would play Guns N' Roses' Welcome in the Jungle on repeat on the jukebox, like, over and over again. And every single shot that I made everyone know that I made that shot. Now, I wasn't negative to my opponent. When my opponent made a good shot, I told him good shot. When he made bad shots, I didn't say anything. It was just me boasting myself up. But people used to hate playing me because of this. I was called out a couple of times. I was put on probation in a league because so many complaints against me playing. But it was actually something I did on purpose to get inside people's heads. And I know in golf, it's supposed to be a little bit more gentlemanly, and you get that 51 weeks out of the year, 50 weeks out of the year, the rest of the time. But I mean, when it comes to match play, I like a little needling. I like a little gamesmanship. I like trying to get into people's heads. That's what it should be about, because that's what it becomes so much more of a big factor, in match play events. What do you think about the situation?
Oh, I thought it was fine. Everything you just said won't, you know, beat it to death. But yeah, the fact of it was definitely an angle, in my opinion, a little bit of investigative research. If you walk back, even on that latest video posted today, DJ never looks at Kevin Na once. He just took the ball. And I think, and you can almost see Kevin Na do a double step, like a double take, where it was almost like he couldn't believe that DJ wouldn't at least look at him. And like you said, being sort of not very humble in general, it was kind of like he used that as an angle to then be like, oh, let me just dial this in. Let me get this my three footer for free here too. I won't take the point, DJ, but I'm going to take this one. You can't do that. We'll move on. Gets in his head. You could see DJ shrug him off like no other. You could read that.
Oh, he was pissed. No sound. He was pissed, bro. I'd never seen DJ like that before. He was pissed.
He just looked at him like, who the fuck are you talking to?
Exactly. Like, exactly. You know, okay. That's exactly what he looked like.
The hand on the shoulder was the extra.
Like, who the fuck are you, dude? Who the fuck are you? That's exactly what I thought DJ was thinking, and it got in his head.
Technically it ended up working out. I mean, all the way through to no media appearances. He withdrew this week, probably had something to do with it. No, I'm kidding. Definitely had nothing to do with that. But I just, you know, the craziest thing was, like you said, it was just that angle that he could take. And everyone does their own thing. You talked about one thing they mentioned earlier in the beginning rounds was Bubba versus Reed. And Bubba, you know, just friendly, happy-go-lucky. And they said on the broadcast, like, it's getting in Reed's head because Reed wants to be that match play boss. Don't look at me. Don't talk to me. It's me versus you, one-on-one. Let's go. American versus American. Wants to always prove himself for the Ryder Cup and things like that. So we've seen it in matchups with Spieth. We've seen it in matchups with Justin Thomas or playing with them. I shouldn't say matchups, when he's paired with them. And he goes out and tries to just work them over. You know, seen that plenty of times. And it was where they said Bubba was just in his head, right?
Doing the opposite. Yeah, because he was being nice. I mean, I've done that with like ex-girlfriends before who just want to fight. You know what I'm saying? And I know they're pissed off at me. And I just, you know,
act and poker's another thing. You know, poker's a mental game where you needle them. You get in their head a little bit. You angle them on the table. Say something a different way where maybe you can get in their head. And next thing you know, they spew off all their chips to you. So it's just an example, again, where when it is this one-on-one factor, every week these golfers are up for themselves individually, which is great. We love it. But like you said, it's 1 week, basically, that we see these, you know, guys get to go head to head like this and do your own thing. It's up to them how they want to be about it. But I would just love to see a little bit more of that. And hopefully some motivation factors, you know, for this week, when we get into talking about it, we can probably move on at that. Anything else for match play, Kenny?
I'm good, man. Let's get to the Listener League winner. It was Jay Brandt 20. It looks like a FTN golf avatar. You had Jordan Spieth at, only 11% owned. Of course, he made it to, I think, the round of 16. He had 96.05 points. John Rahm, I think he made it to the Elite Eight, if I'm not mistaken, 32.64% owned, 110.2 points. Hatton, who lost in the round robin, 20% owned, 32 points. Harmon, who made it pretty far, I think Elite Eight, 18.75% owned, 110.3 points. Billy Horschel, the winner. 7.47% owned, 172.1 points. And Victor Perez, who was I was a fan of last week. He's the one that saved me and actually helped me win a little bit of my money back. 8.3% owned, 158.4 points. What'd you think?
Yeah, we loved Perez, man. We hyped him up because Sundog liked him. Remember, Sundog liked him a couple weeks before when we talked about that and how he grinded out the cut at the Players to then finish top 10. So it made some sense.
He needed that win on Sunday to beat Kuchar to get a special temporary membership. But he'll be fine. He's so high up in the rankings that we'll be seeing him.
We'll see him lots, and he plays some damn good golf. So it's like you said, he's got a great team around him. Everyone that talks about him talks very highly. So expect to see a lot more of him. The lineup was great. It was built correctly.
He's got a pretty sweet swing, man. He's got especially with his irons. It's a pretty sweet swing. I think you'll see him around. I mean, it's not like he's young. I think he's like 31. So he's not like, you know, a puppy, but I think we'll still see him a bunch.
Yeah. And he could have done a lot worse in that matchup against Kuchar. He was down quite a bit, did battle back and make it a little bit of a fight. So that was good to see. But yeah, overall, the lineup was good. I do a lineup review show every week, Mondays. on RotoGrinders talking about, I know 812 was sort of the high score that was seen out there. So 679 is a far cry from that, but it's good enough here in our tournament. And it was built correctly. The lineup's good. It's got Rahm from quadrant in the bottom right, Spieth top right, Hatton top left, Horschel bottom low, and then the other two fit in for a 4-2 build that worked out. But overall, just, you know, Billy Horschel's the winner. That makes sense. Perez taking down the DJ group and then moving on from there made sense there. And also the other nice thing about Perez, we looked at it today, was just that they wouldn't have to meet up with the Hatton Sergio type group until the end anyway. So kind of got a nice little path if you could get past DJ in that group. So overall, nice lineup. We got Jay Brandt 20. I saw him hop into the Tournament of Champions League with us. We'll have him in the three man this week. And then some other guys there, Primero, C. Gamble, L. Bullard, JB in ninth, a couple good guys that we know a lot about. So, you know, good to see them all upside in the top 10 as well. Hopefully they had some pretty good weeks and go from there.
Yeah. Also a shout out to, I think his name's Ry Cohen. He's been a follower of ours for a long time, listens to our pod all the time. I think he took down like 20 grand. Or something. He won first
25
place.
G's, I think. Yeah, it was huge.
Yeah, so shout out to him. Always a long-time listener. So always happy when a long-time listener wins a bunch of money. Let's go into this week. Golfers on the PGA Tour moved to Texas this week to play the Valero Texas Open from TPC San Antonio. Texas Open, one of the oldest tournaments on tour. It's been played at TPC San Antonio since 2010. It consistently ranks as one of the 10 hardest courses on tour, but can play a bit easier in pristine weather conditions. The course was designed by Greg Norman in 2009. He was going through a divorce at the time. So, you know, it could be a reason why he made the course so difficult. It's very long. It's very difficult. The par fives are especially long, with most being close to 600 yards. The average score for the par fives here since 2010 is 4.9 strokes, which is the highest of any course on tour. The weather usually plays a factor, as high winds are the norm. Looking at the forecast, it looks like there could be some high winds Wednesday on Thursday morning. There could be a wave advantage the first two rounds. In 2015, there was a 4-5 stroke difference between the morning wave and the afternoon wave of the first day. So, you know, of course, pay attention to that. The forecast isn't concrete. It's a Monday afternoon when we're doing this pod. So you make sure you check on that close to the lock. That's actually going to affect my cash game cornerstones this week. This will be the one week where I could possibly change them. Just because if I do see a crazy wave advantage, you know, I'm probably going to change them. So you can check my article on Wednesday to see my final cash game cornerstones. We'll see if it changes. You know, a lot of Australians tend to do well here. In interviews, many of them say that TPC San Antonio reminds them of courses back in their home country. It makes sense. You know, Greg Norman was the designer, so it definitely makes sense. So get to the main part of the course. TPC San Antonio, 7,435 yard, par 72, with four par threes and four par fives. Only one par five is reachable by all. 58 bunkers on the course and water hazards on three holes. Off the tee, golfers will face tree-lined fairways to get more narrow the farther away from the tee box you go, with large bunkers in play. Native areas will play a big factor. Speaking of Kevin Na, he had that 16 here. On number nine a few years ago. These native areas consist of desert, brush, trees, and rocks. Golfers need to avoid these areas or get lucky when they do hit it into them to succeed this week. These fairways are some of the toughest on tour to hit, as only around 56% of tee shots land in the short grass. The rough is usually thick and long here, but it's possible they keep it a little shorter this week to mimic conditions at Augusta. It's something to pay attention as you go throughout the week. On approach shots, golfers will see average-sized greens that are multi-tiered with a lot of undulation. Like Augusta National, the edges around the greens are closely mowed, so many approach shots that just miss will lead to tricky up and downs from different collection areas or bunkers. Only around 57% of approach shots land on the green, so getting it up and down from off the greens will be very important. The greens are usually firm with a stint meter rating of around 11.5, but it's possible they speed them up a little bit for the Masters next week. The grass used is Bermuda grass overseeded with Benton rye. What are you looking for this week, Tambo?
Yeah, you just talked about a little bit there. A lot of the things you mentioned, actually, I was thinking of. The weather is a huge factor, certainly. I mean, this is a spot where definitely wave stacks are in play, so keep an eye on that stuff for sure, like Kenny mentioned. All around, golfers hitting the fairways key. You mentioned the around the green game. The touch there is important just because not a lot of greens are hit anyway, so anybody that can dial it in there. But you can go off like, you know, Corey Connors did last year and just be a ball-striking phenomenon as well and never have to worry about that. And then you're all good. Just got to make some putts down the stretch, right? So for me, that's it for the most part. Obviously, we got a little bit of – I'm not sure we can segue into that before we get into the upper tier. Kenny, any thoughts on these guys coming back from Punta Cana? Like we didn't talk about the little Joe Damon situation.
From
the Corrales. From there's a lot of guys in this tournament that played in the Corrales that actually played some pretty good golf that are even cheaper in this field in some instances that you know we'll see play here right away. Now in Texas.
I'm not too worried about that. What is it, like a 2 hour difference? I mean, I'm not stressing that at all. The only person I might worry about, if let's go up to the top range, is going to be Scheffler. If he's a little bit tired playing that many days in a row, that many matches, I could maybe worry about him a little bit. No one else I'm really paying attention to about that. I'm just going to go about it as a normal week.
Yeah.
All right. Okay, so let's get to this top range. We got Hideki, Scotty, Spieth, and Finau. Since DJ withdrew, who are you going with?
Yeah, it's hard for me. I don't know. Spieth's a new favorite here, so I get sort of the betting angle since I think his number is similar to, or it was this morning when people woke up, similar to his number at the Masters, which is pretty crazy considering the field strength. But you know, I don't know for DFS. I don't know if he's going to be popular or not. I knew this morning when I first looked at it that with DJ in the field at 11-8, it would make it a little bit more different for how people are setting up their lineups and whatnot. But I guess Scheffler, you know, the Texas fan love last week was definitely something there. So if you actually watch the match play, it wasn't just like him getting lucky and winning holes and, you know, getting easy matchups. He actually played some incredible golf, much like one guy we'll talk about later, Mr. Matt Kuchar. But this price is high, and if he's going to be popular, I could definitely see fading him because of that. I don't really play Decky. You know this, when he's five figures, just doesn't have enough upside. You know, if you relate it to different sports in DFS, it's almost like the, you know, the cash game play where you could just play him to get your made cut and top 30th or whatever. But is he going to come through when there's guys around him? Then it depends on if the others do. But if people aren't going to play Finau just because he's 11K, I kind of like the, you know, I talk about this all the time, but paying up for probability. If I'll get low ownership on Finau because of that 11,000, then I'll definitely still play him regardless of what's happened the last couple times or whatever. That, you know, for the grand scheme of things, he's been doing pretty damn good, and I like his upside. This is, you know, he needs a win. This would be a field where he could win. He's got the all-around game. His around the green game touch is typically very strong, so even if he is for some reason missing greens and not hitting them, I've got him as the next best up in that top five figure range to Dustin Johnson, who's no longer here. So certainly still interested in Finau myself.
Yeah, I like Spieth. The guy has just been on an upward trend. I mean, you know, and the thing is, I don't think he's going to look past this week for the Masters because he hasn't had a win in fucking forever. And this could be a good choice, good chance for him to do so, you know, solid around the greens. And he can put his ass off, and his iron game's great. I think the last three winners were like first, and second in strokes gained approach for the week at Valero. So, you know, his iron game's been extremely strong. I think top five in the world in the last, I don't know, month and a half, 2 months. So I like Spieth. I think I'll play Finau if the ownership's low. If not, I'll probably stick with Spieth up top this week. In the 9K range, I'm going to go over a couple of cash game cornerstones I do have this week. First, it's going to be Corey Connors. Is he the defending champion? It was skipped last year, right?
Yeah, so well, he's the Rory McIlroy of the players is the Corey Connors of the Valero, the 2019 edition.
Yeah. So I guess he is the defending champion. I mean, all the metrics say that he should do well again here. I mean, he's coming back to a place he's won before. His form has been extremely strong. Iron game, one of the best in the field. Tee to green, awesome. Lots of birdies. Really good off the tee. And I think his off the tee game is great because he blends accuracy with not being too short. I mean, he's not like super long, but he's not too short. And he's accurate off the tee. I think he's sixth in strokes gain or fourth in strokes gain off the tee in this field in the last 40 rounds. Last 50 rounds, he's also really good on par four scoring. You're going to need to get a lot of birdies, score well on the par fours because the par fives are difficult. Here. So I do like Corey Connors as my first cash game cornerstone. Another one, I'm going Charlie Hoffman, who's had good form as well. He struggled a little bit on the weekend in Corrales, but was good the first couple of days. I don't think he's missed a cut here. I think he's 13 for 13. So I'm definitely going a little bit on course history when it comes to Hoffman. And you know, his ass wants to play in the Masters so he can be first round leader. So
yeah, exactly.
So I like those two guys as my cash game cornerstones. And then I like Ryan Palmer a little bit. If the wind picks up, again, another birdie maker, scores a lot of DraftKings points, good in the wind. I don't know how popular he'll be. We'll see. So I like Palmer. Who do you like?
Yeah, I wonder if this range, like, I feel like it just gets peppered with plays because it reminds me almost of the players. Much different field strength. JT was 9.9 at the players. But if you remember, that range at the players was JT, Cantlay, Finau, Webb, you name it, in that 9K range here. a little bit different, but I don't like, people just don't love Finau, Matsuyama don't win. Spieth is polarizing. People don't always go to him. Scheffler, there's a lot of conversation around, you know, the match play and him just being there last week and going through that mental grind to come in second. So who knows? But I feel like Answer gets popular here. So I was wondering sort of your take on that. I'm with you on Connors, Hoffman. I like Palmer, but I like Tringali. I'm going to stick with him. I know that, you know, people don't like playing him at certain prices. And when I forget what his ownership was when he was 9,100 a couple weeks ago, but he still came through and had himself a pretty good week. And I could even see starting some lineups with like Tringali and Hoffman to be a little bit different and just fade some of those guys up above if you don't feel like they've got the win equity there and go down from there. But yeah, for the most part, it's going to be Connors, Answer, Tringali with Hoffman. Those are the four in this range.
All right, let's move to the AK range. I go with my third cash game cornerstone. It's going to be Chris Kirk, who's played this course pretty well throughout his career, a couple top tens. He's been playing pretty good golf, really good around the greens, really good on par fours. Tee to green, he's been solid. So I like Chris Kirk as my third cash game cornerstone. I sort of like Lanto this week as well. I know it's a little bit pricier. He's not under 6K like like he is when we really want to play him, but his iron game's been really strong here lately, 10th in the field in the last 12 rounds. In strokes gained approach, the majority of the approaches on this course, I think almost 50% go from 150 to 200 yards. He's good on both, good on par four scoring. So I like Lanto, and I like Cam Davis, the Aussie narrative that I talked about a little bit earlier. Again, strong iron play, a 14th in proximity from 100. Actually, let me go back real quick. 28th in proximity from 150 to 175 yards, and 7th from 175 to 200 yards. Really good in the range I'm looking for. Really strong off the tee. His around the green game is a little something to be, you know, worried about, but hopefully he hits enough greens to do okay. And I like Zach Johnson. Again, he's been playing pretty good golf, good history here. Cut maker, I sort of like him as well.
Yeah, any thoughts? We skip this guy in the 9K. I'll just hit you up real quick on this. Matt Kuchar last week. I would just say one thing. I guess, you know, he didn't really, he hasn't been performing. It's obviously his format. As you know, I think it was they showed the graphic 20 times of how he's now tied with Tiger for the most times making the semis or whatever, but going on to get third place. So any thoughts on him? Because he did have to beat some decent opponents and he had to play right out of the millionth time now, the quote unquote group of death. He had to play his way out of that to get on to where he got to. So any thoughts on Kuchar at 9K in this field?
I don't know about Kuchar. I just because he's in his last, dozen starts on stroke play events, I don't think he has a single top 20. And at that price, I don't know if I want to risk it. If he was cheaper, like 7,800, 7,900, I'd probably be in, but probably not at that price.
Yeah, I like the guys below him too. That's why I asked. I was going to say just what you said. The 9K seems like it's kind of interesting in last week, but if you want to take that angle, but at the same time, where's the upside, right? And I'd rather play some of these boomer bust plays, a guy like Siwoo Kim. If you look at his overall stats, they just have been incredible across the board for last 50 rounds, 10th ball striking, second around the green, which is important, fourth bogey avoidance. If that wind picks up, anything like that, we should be in a good spot here with him. I love the Lanto call though that you mentioned. I guess here's the biggest thing on Lanto is, like you said, people always want to talk about the under 6K or under 7K, as long as he's 6,900 or less, the Rick Rungood rule. And that's great. And it made sense for a long time, but he's beat that out now. Like if you look at his last five events, 35th is his worst, but 35th, 21st, 22nd, 26th, and 7th. And these are the tournaments he played in. The Players, the API, WGC Mexico, the Genesis, and the Farmers. So you talk about those. I'm putting the in front of all the Farmers Insurance Open, all these ones, you know what I'm talking about. But these are much tougher fields. So for him to be 8,700 here, he's better than this field for the most part. And I think that could be a really solid play in the 8K range there. Cam Davis is a guy I'll always play just because if he makes the cut, the upside is huge, even when he finishes in. Here's the example, him and Kuchar. That's why I won't play Kuchar here, is because Cam Davis, if they both make the cut, they could finish in the same spot on the leaderboard, but Cam Davis will have him beat by 10 to 15 points, just the way he scores. So that's why you're playing Cam Davis there and not Kuchar in my mind. If Kuchar bites me, then that's fine. You know, I'll go with him. Chris Kirk, I like your call. ZJ, I really like a lot of this range. Keegan Bradley, the only one I'm going to bring it up to is Ricky Fowler. And the only reason I'm going to bring it up, I'm definitely going to play him. I have to, just a personal thing here. But when Ian Poulter needed to make the Masters by winning, remember the points mess up and he had to go win the Houston Open to get in over Bo Hostler in the playoff? That was my biggest DFS week ever. And it was all motivation factor. And we know what happens here. There's, the Masters is all set. It's all buttoned up. there's one potential spot remaining, and that's if somebody wins this tournament that's not already in the Masters. So who knows what Ricky Fowler will do, but at 8,100, make the cut, give me some upside. He's been way off. I get it. But finally, a field that is like really weak that you could just see it happen. So,
like, what upside? There's no way I'm playing Fowler. That dude, he's on another spiral like Spieth. And it's totally different
when there's motivation involved, though.
I have to see something from him. I'm not playing his ass. There's no fucking way.
Well, if we all waited to see something from him, and that's when he bites you again the next week when he's 20%, when everyone says, okay, now I'll jump on board. So,
I'd rather wait. But the guy sucks ass. There's no way I'm fucking playing him. He's horrible.
Yeah. No one's playing.
He's horrible.
Yeah.
He's horrible. 120th in approach in his last 50 rounds in this field. 108th in putting. 114th in proximity from 175 to 200 yards. No, thank you.
There's something about it, man. This was where Poulter was at the same time, and everyone said that he was like 4%.
Yeah, but he wasn't playing like dog shit like fucking Fowler. There's no fucking way I'm playing. Good luck to you.
It's a motivation factor. I'll certainly be playing him. I don't know. But there's not a lot of other guys here, right? Like, I don't really want to play Hadwin. I don't want to play Joel Damon off the win. By the way, congrats to Joel Damon. That was a huge win. And I think that was an interesting topic as well, because everyone's always talked about how he's only in it for the money and whatnot. And it certainly look, I mean, obviously got a nice little paycheck there and gets to stay on tour for a while and keep playing for big money. The only thing I think you said he missed out on was the Masters invite. But, I mean, he can get his own. Maybe he's the play here at 8,200, $100 more than Ricky for a guy that wants to get a Masters invite. Coming off a win, he might still be hung over though, for all we know. Yeah. But
I mean, I don't understand why people hate on people trying to just make money. I mean, fuck it, it's a job. Your goal is to make money. I got no problems with that. Do your thing. You know, I like his quote: treating this like, hopefully he has more wins, but he's celebrating like this is his last. Because it definitely well could be. I mean, he's made $7 million. He wants to support his family. He's doing his thing. I got no problem with that shit. Good for him. Yeah. Let's move on to the 7K range. I like Brendan Grace at 7,800. Coming off a win a few weeks ago. Pretty good in the win. Pretty good in tough conditions. Tough courses. Never really highly owned. So I like him at this range. I like... my final cast game cornerstone is going to be, I'm going to go all the way down to the bottom and just go with it. It's going to be Chase Seifert with three top 20s in his last four events. I think four top 20s in his last six events. His iron game has been exceptionally strong. He's making a bunch of cuts. He plays well in the wind, at least he has recently. So my cash game cornerstones for this week are going to be Corey Connors at 9,700. Corey Connors at 9,500. Charlie Hoffman at 9,200. Chris Kirk at 8,600 and Seifert at 7,100. This leaves well over $15,000 to finish out your lineup. But then again, like I said earlier, this could change. If there is a massive wave advantage that we can see Wednesday night, I might change this. So make sure you check my article out this week on Wednesday. Other guys do like in this top range. Willett, he's been playing decent golf kind of leading up. I could throw him in there. I could throw Wallace in there. The two Euros that never really get played that often. I think those are the three guys up top that I might focus on. I'm tempted with Harold Varner, tempted with Ryan Moore, just because of his course history, but Moore really hasn't been playing that great of golf. So I'm not really 100% sure how I'll go with those guys. But the three non-US players, Grace, Wallace, and Willett, are guys I play up top. Oh, and Putnam. I like Putnam. He's been playing good golf. And so another guy who never really garners too much ownership, relies a lot on his putter, but that's just who he is. And it's another guy I'll be picking up in this top range. Who do you like?
A few of the guys that you mentioned, they're the same. I just want to go back and see one thing right quick. But yeah, the guys you mentioned were good. The Euro players, especially like, so Grace, Wallace, Willett, especially if it's going to be harder conditions, a little bit windier, that sort of thing. We saw, I believe it was Andrew Landry pick it up here in that type of setup. And he's sort of that same play. We saw him come out at one of the majors there where it was windy and everything and do his thing, grind it out. That's what those guys do. So they would certainly be in play for that. I do like HV3 regardless of anything at the price, 7,900. I think he can play pretty good in the wind. All of his numbers, the around the green game is great. Doesn't make a lot of bogeys or huge mistakes. You know, it's usually one or two holes, but at 7,900, he's got plenty of upside there at that price. Another guy though, I'm going to take this because they called it, this is the nickname they had for Kuchar. I think it was Spieth called him the smiling assassin. But I always say this about Sebastian Munoz. The guy's just always smiling, but he's taking shit down and crushing or doing well. And he didn't have the best match play setup, but he was in the same tier there with Rom. But overall, if you look at his stats over the last while, they've been solid. I could play some of him, maybe some Benny on. He's another guy really not showing us much lately, but if you want to take a page out of the Corey Connors book back in 2019, that's the kind of thing we would have to see here with him. EVR, if he's not too gassed, he got out of his group there last week, looked pretty good. The other two for me are Johnny Huh, Johnny question mark, just continuously goes overlooked in PGA DFS in general. And 7,400, it's just a play where he's going to be your fourth or fifth guy in. It's not going to kill you. And then Seaweed Doug, we've been following this guy for quite a while now and liking his play, and he's never done anything to steer me off of him. You look at his numbers, he actually rates out quite well in this field. Last 50 rounds, really solid in ball striking, approach, around the green, DK scoring, birdie or better, you know, hits fairways, all the stats do line up. Chase Seifert, you called that one already. I like that. Matthew Neesmith, stick with him, ball striking, hitting fairways. Matt Neesmith is a guy, and then Seb Straka too. Seb Straka played really well last week in Punta Cana. He definitely burned some people on Sunday with a 72 there, but he played some pretty good golf. I was going to mention, though, what I just talked about with Neesmith. Him, I guess we're getting into the 6K range. Anybody else you want to talk about in the 7K range, Kenny? Otherwise, I'll go.
Yeah, I like Seaweed Doug, just like you. I think Adam Long is playing a little bit better golf than he has in just the beginning of the season. I think he's coming up. I think he's someone that's going to be very low-owned that you can go on here. Pat Kazire, same, another guy who's possibly going to be low-owned that you can play here. Harry Higgs, another guy. So there's guys in this lower 7K range that I definitely like. But those are four of them that I do like in this lower 7K range. Why don't you go to the 6K Tampa?
Yeah, I like the long call that you've got there too. I missed him, but definitely in on that. I've heard a little bit of love for Chapel since he's the former winner here and whatnot. But the only Kevin story that I could remember from here was the one you mentioned earlier back in 2011, the 16 that Kevin Na carded. So yeah. not too high on Chapel there. You took that one from me earlier. I had to bring it back up. But Tom Lewis, another guy you talked about up above there with like Wallace and Grace Willett, those type of guys. Tom Lewis, the guy that goes overlooked quite a bit. I think he'd be interesting. Roger Sloan, Canadian guy, bring him up. There was a lot of Canadian love here. I'll get into it a little bit more here, but him and Whaley, the other guy, Vincent Whaley down here at 6,100. He's a little sleeper that's on a bit of a run. 15th at the Puerto Rico Open, 36th at the Honda with some nice stats across the board. And then 28th last week was one of the better rounds on
really
Sunday.
Really good Sunday. Yep. I had him.
Which was in the wind. And I was going to say, if you're following that and you think there's going to be some wind here, I mean, he's probably fine either way. If you look at a guy like Troy Merritt, he had a decent week over at Corrales, but a very rough Sunday in the wind. So it kind of be the opposite. And then I got to bring up my guy, me and Baroff were talking about over the weekend, Michael Glidzik. Wow, we played this guy forever. I was so happy to see he didn't get the win. Not that I'm cheering against him. He's another Canadian brethren. But, you know, if we missed him, I would have been pissed. And he played really well in Punta Cana. And then our boy, Kenny, we've had these KH Lee, Adam Svensson battles in the past. He's not here. I don't, at least don't think he is. I'd have to look it up. He's definitely not here. Just let me check.
Who?
But KH Lee? No, Adam Svensson. I think KH Lee's here, but we had these battles. But Adam Svensson, by the way, won on the Korn Ferry Tour last week. You and I went back and forth on him versus KH Lee, and he is the first Canadian Korn Ferry Tour winner since Michael Glidzik back in 2019. So got to have a little love here for my guy, Michael G, down at 6,200. Who do you got in the 6K range?
I'm playing Campos. I can't believe his putt didn't go in.
Oh, my God.
That was just brutal. Like, he had the fist pump ready, and it just last second, that thing just broke left and lipped out. I felt so bad for him. So I'm going to play him this week. Hopefully, he can go off on his second-place finish and do pretty well. Again, another guy who's pretty good in the wind. So I'll play Campos. I'll play Grayson Sig, another guy who played pretty well last week. I do like your Tom Lewis call. I will play him. I like your Roger Sloan call. I'll play him a little bit of, I might play a little Whaley. Is Whaley in the field? I'm looking for him. Where is he at?
Yeah, man, he's 6,100. He's free.
Okay. Oh yeah, no, definitely. I like him. I like that guy. I think he can play well. So I'm with you on those guys for this week. Anybody else we miss?
One more, Bo Hogue. I was on him a couple of weeks ago. This guy, when we were talking Jack Nicklaus and his dad and or his grandfather and his connection there. But if you look at his stats and just go back to it again, like this is Fratelli 2.0. I played Fratelli at 8,200. He destroyed me, crushed all my best lineups. I had some amazing 5 out of 6 lineups with Fratelli, only for him to go on and just crush in the match play and be in all the optimal lineups and whatnot. In the end, even though he didn't get super far, he did enough on those first couple of days, the way he scored. And I think he won 6 and 5 or something and just crushed. But anyway, Bo Hogue, if you go across the board, just doesn't make very many bogeys, hits fairways, decent around the greens, like pretty much everything that would line up here. So he's not one of my favorite plays or anything. I just think it's just one to mention for, we always talk about flop leg in DFS, a guy that you're on sucks, and then you don't play him the next time out and he comes back and crushes you. That would be a very prime candidate, and did pretty well at the Amex, the Farmers, the Genesis, the API, had some decent stats at the Players and just didn't come through. And then again, same thing at the Honda, really just didn't have a short game for 1 week and just missed. So yeah, I can go back to him at 6,400 as well.
All right, let's get the bets for this week. I'll go first. It's going to be a lighter card this week. I'm going to try and save my wad for the Masters. So I got Chris Kirk at 43-1. Cam Davis is 47-1. Lanto Griffin at 65-1. And Chase Seifert at 150-1. Tambo.
Yeah, I got these, and they didn't go down that much, but I got them before the DJ withdrawal. But I had Scheffler at 18. Like I said, I'm not sure what I'm going to do yet with him in DFS, see what people are doing up at the top there. But I feel pretty good about him still. Like I said, just watching him and play and how well he played and with fans and things like that were there with him, it just felt like he was just really solid. We've seen a lot out of him. So 18-1 on him. I got Answer at 25 because I just like that number. And I've been playing Answer, so I'm going to stick with it. It reminds me of Finau of old, just betting him and never winning. But Davis, who you mentioned, I got him 55 with a T5 each way. Grace, who you mentioned earlier, but I'm not sure if you're betting, but 75 with the T5 each way. And then Munoz, 80 with the T5 each way. That's my five that I got right now.
All right, nice. One and done. I'm probably going to go Connors, Kirk, Davis, or Lanto.
Yeah, similar path. Connors and Davis were on my list. Siwoo, Kirk was up there. Keegan Bradley, just some guys that, like I said, maybe I'll go Ricky and just use them up.
Good luck. You're going to lose. You're going to be in last place.
Yeah, that's not hard to do for me in one and done. So we'll take that. But yeah, that's it for me.
All right. Well, you can find me on Twitter at KendoVT. You can find my article every week on GupsCorner.com. Like I said, on Wednesday, I'll update my cash game cornerstones. I will have my favorite DFS plays. I'll have my favorite bets all logged in on there. And make sure you check out my Twitter feed for some promos for GupsCorner.com. So make sure you check it out, Tambo.
Yeah, you guys know where to find me on Twitter at ToteganTambo. Hit me up there if you have any questions or in the RotoGrinders Discord, same name. Head on over to RotoGrinders.com/DGen. Get yourself $10 off the first month. We got the Tuesday show with Noto and Cards. Got the Wednesday show going over lineup HQ, setting up all our rosters. We'll have a lot better idea by Wednesday evening where the ownership's at, what the common build types are, and how we can maybe build around again. It is a game of beating your opponents, so we're trying to find any way, an edge possible that we can utilize to do so.
All right, so six more sleeps until Augusta. It's almost that time. But first, we have the Valero Texas Open. So let's win some motherfucking money. DGen Nation.